fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Oh, David Johnson, baby! A hop, a skip, a jump.
He is a freak. There's no doubt.
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
You know what we say this time of year on Cardinals Underground? That we tend to miss more on the man than the podcaster. Hence, may we present Darren Urban and Kyle Odegaard, Pauly Podcaster over here.
Was that an insult on, about all of us?
That would be Pauly pre-draft over here. I'm just saying that.
I like how you kind of took that and ran with
if
it.
If some of the processes were in place back when we drafted you gentlemen, we're not exactly sure. I mean, yeah, we've come to learn the Arizona Cardinals are, quote, digging deeper than ever before, talking to Little League coaches, high school coaches. I'm not sure that would have been in your best interest, gentlemen. I'm just throwing that out there.
All I can say is I once won a championship when I was 11 in the league. That's what I remember from Little League.
Did you do so with aplomb and decorum, though?
I did so mostly on the bench.
I didn't have any high school coaches, so I'm good.
Okay.
Nothing to find.
All right. We'll violate our no math rule right off the top. Would you believe 5,000 college scouting reports yielding 823 grades of what's considered draft-eligible legit NFL prospects from 300-plus colleges, all to finalize a top 120 board. Yes, tis the season for our pre-draft edition of Cardinals Underground here on azcardinals.com. Let the numbers wash over you. What we're about to present, we hope, is not misinformation, which is basically the rest of the universe out there. Wouldn't you agree, Darren? I mean, come on. Tis the season for a lot of misdirection and smokescreens.
I will say this, and correct me if you guys think I'm wrong, though. I did feel like the pre-draft press conference with Bruce Arians and Steve Keim, I don't know if there was a whole lot of misinformation there. Now, part of that is because, as I was telling Kyle earlier, I feel like over the years, us as a media group have morphed. Like, we just don't waste our time with the questions that we know are going to get lies or misinformation, so we just don't ask those questions anymore. You know,
nobody's saying, who are you going to take at number 13?
No.
Nobody's actually throwing that out there.
Yeah, and you can probably glean more when you ask more general stuff. And if they start talking about certain things, it's like, okay, now we know exactly what you're going to do. And it was probably a lie anyways.
I was going to say that at the very end, just for yucks, just to say, and you are taking a number 13 or here's the thing. Did you guys notice? All right. Now, this is way out there. But did you guys notice and let the record reflect that if you go back and you really parse through every single word that Steve Keim said in the 27 minutes plus of the pre-draft presser alongside Bruce Arians, he mentioned number 9 in the draft order.
I did notice that.
Several times. Every example he used of moving up or moving down or some sort of draft day trait involved picking 9th. Who does pick number 9? And is there something in the works with a team currently picking number 9?
I can't even think of who it is.
Carolina's 8, right?
Yeah. And I know, obviously, Cleveland's 12, and that's a team where you think about that's a quarterback needy team. Yeah. So if you do need to jump up a few spots, but I think number 9 is something that's like a realistic jump. If you're talking about 3 or 4, you just have to give up so much. So I think 9 is just a number, and it's, I don't think it's specific. I don't believe that they're targeting the number 9 choice and they're going to trade to number 9. I think he was just using a number.
You don't think he went all Denny Green at the combine and the couple times when he talked all how much he loved J.J. Arrington, and then all of a sudden he drafted him 2 months later?
Right. I will say this, though. If you combine it with what B.A. has said over the last couple months in various national interviews, and I think at his breakfast address there at the NFL owners meeting, that in the last 2 years, they've been on the verge of drafting a quarterback, and someone has come in right before them and selected said quarterback. And so if you take the fact that they might be terrified that everyone knows the Arizona Cardinals want a quarterback of the future, a franchise quarterback, and no one's just going to let them sit there at number 13 and pick a Patrick Mahomes, that a team, this is my biggest fear.
Yeah.
Everyone knows it is a need and a want, and someone's going to fly in right before them and snag that guy.
But see, here's the thing that I've been thinking about for a long time, and somebody brought this up in terms of, you know, somebody asked me about Mahomes in particular, about, you know, what about the fact that his draft stock is rising? And I'm like, okay, is Pat Mahomes' draft stock really rising, or is what is truly rising the panic level of all these teams that they're not going to get a quarterback that
they want?
That's a great point. Because Pat Mahomes or Mitchell Trubisky or Deshaun Watson or Deshaun Kizer or any of these guys, they're no different of a quarterback now than they were in December. The difference now is that now we're getting closer to the draft. And as we've talked about a million times, and it's funny, I've heard people say, okay, the talent level of these quarterbacks isn't, you know, there's no sure thing. Okay, that's no unquestioned. And there's been a lot of guys who had said there's no first round talent. There still might not be any first round talent, but I've held all along there's going to be at least three quarterbacks taken in the first round because there always is.
You know what has changed, though? Tell me if I'm wrong on this, is that these quarterbacks have come in for their one-on-one meetings, their pre-draft visits, and Bruce Arians has a chance to get these guys up on the grease board.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he found a guy who's a savant. Maybe he found one of these quarterbacks is extremely prolific and intelligent in the Bruce Arians system. In fact, let's listen to BA talk a little bit about that, because we had a chance, one of the questions we asked him during the pre-draft presser was like, all right, when you're dealing with air raid quarterbacks, how do you evaluate them and what do you look for?
It's not the system as much as the player. When you get them on the board and you start teaching them your offense and they can spit it back in 15 minutes and then 2 hours later spit it back again, then you know they can learn any system.
So to answer your question, Darren, and I totally agree, and Steve Keim mentioned this is one of the biggest risks from when the season ends and when the NFL holds a draft in late April, that, wait a minute, all of a sudden you're judging and basing picks on stuff that's not football specific. But if you find a quarterback who has that football IQ, Kyle, maybe that is a difference maker.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing at that position where you can make it work at other positions. If they're not they don't have the best football IQ, I think guys can still be good players at other positions, especially, you know, a defensive line or something, certain things where you don't have to read coverages and read blitzes and figure out everything that's going on. You need a great arm, but the mental capacity of a quarterback, I think, is the most important thing, where we saw that with Peyton Manning at the end of his career when he had the neck surgeries. His arm wasn't close to what it used to be, but there were a couple years there where he was still a great quarterback because he knew exactly what the defense was doing every time. And as a rookie, he's not going to come in and have that command. But if you see that future and you've got the arm talent, I think that's when we're talking about there. Maybe there isn't this number one overall pick that's going to go, but if they love a guy, and that's why I think we're talking about maybe trading up, because you want to wait and you don't want to force it. But if you think a franchise quarterback, you can get him in the first round with the low salary implications that come with it, I think that's when it's a legitimate thought of moving up.
But see, my question would be, if you really have a savant type who's that smart, that guy's not there at 13 and he's not even there at 9. I mean, you got quarterback needy teams in the top 5. I don't understand how Cleveland or San Francisco or even Chicago, and those are your first 3 picks, I don't see how they're passing on quarterbacks. If that guy is getting into buildings, I'm assuming those teams are also doing their due diligence on all these guys, and you find, I mean, I'm assuming this whatever quarterback it might be isn't quote unquote throwing his interview with the Chicago right. Bears and then impressing the Arizona
true.
Cardinals.
Yeah.
You know,
although they run a totally different system,
true,
than Bruce Arians, it might not be nearly as complex.
And maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
I'm just speculating. Maybe like a Davis Webb. Or I'll just throw that out there. All right, and here's a guy who's 6'5", big arm, stands tall in the pocket.
Cal.
Yet he's been in the air raid. Texas Tech got beat up by Patrick Mahomes. Right. I mean, he's never huddled up. He's never even called out of protection. I mean, hot sights, right? He can't even call a regular play in the huddle. I mean, there's all these things he can't do.
Or he hasn't done.
Hasn't done.
We don't know if he can.
Right, okay. And so he comes in, but then wait a minute. He's a coach's son. And what if he's really intelligent, really capable on that grease board, and BA, all of a sudden something goes off in his mind?
I don't want to get too far afield here, Paul, but I think this provides us an excellent opportunity. If the Cardinals draft Webb, and he turns out to be a really solid quarterback, are you happy that you're covering this guy for this team?
No,
or are
no.
you irritated
no.
that where was this guy?
No. Where was Aaron Rodgers when we needed him?
Well,
that's my
point.
Question.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
All right. So
look,
we know how deep the bitterness goes.
Because we've been through the downtimes when the hashtag around here was no QB, no chance. And basically Steve Keim said that.
Yes.
He basically said that and then added this about supply and demand in the NFL.
The thing that's hard for me as I think back about that position, there's only so many people walking this earth that have the ability to not only make the throws from a physical standpoint, but their mind to be able to play fast enough as well. I mean, that's why supply and demand is such an issue at this level.
And here's what else I found interesting is near the top of the press conference, it might have been in response to your question, Kyle, about quarterbacks. I'm not sure who asked it, but BA all of a sudden threw out that there's four, five, or six arms, not QBs. He said NFL arms in the draft.
Like which cyborgs.
Which is borderline misinformation, right? Because earlier he had said there was one NFL QB ready to go, right? Ready to play, plug and play. Yeah.
Well, and he was asked, is there one starter among these quarterbacks? And his answer was there are five or six, I think is what he said.
Yeah,
and
he said arms, quarterbacks. He said NFL arms,
like
which I thought was interesting.
You can take them apart.
No, I'm totally parsing the words, yes.
That's the thing. Like, is he saying that because he's trying to be cute with it by using those different words, or are we just analyzing every single word in a press conference transcript?
That's what
saying,
we're trying to do. Well, that's what we do.
He said arms. He didn't say quarterback. But
John Skelton and John Navarre were NFL arms.
Yeah.
Arms.
True. And they started.
Yeah. But I think the general idea of what he was saying was he's impressed by this quarterback class. Whether he's lying or he's telling the truth, I don't know. But the message I think he was conveying during the press conference is he likes the players in the draft that are quarterbacks, and he thinks quite a few of them could succeed.
I heard you, Darren Urban, on with Bertrand Berry, and I loved your point about accuracy. You got to find an NFL quarterback who is accurate.
Well, I mean, again, you've been around this team as long as I've been around this team, and there have been – you know, guys, you just mentioned two of them.
Yeah. I mean, Logan Thomas would be the most
recent.
Logan
Thomas, and that's the one that everybody, I mean, I have been around coaches. Bruce Arians has said it. You know, I think it was said before with Ken Wisenhunt. He brought it up before that. Danny Green would talk. I mean, every coach I've ever come across seems to believe that accuracy is something that you can work with. It's the footwork and it's everything. Yet I don't see those guys getting more accurate. And to me, that's
don't
the
buy it.
Now there's all these other things that have to go into it. Like we just heard Steve Keim say, you know, you have to have the mental ability to process all this, and you have to have the physical ability, and you got to have a strong enough arm. It doesn't have to be the strongest arm, but it's got to be strong enough to throw a ball deep down the field without it being a problem. But to me, number one is the accuracy, because the windows are just so much smaller. And I just don't see how a guy who's throwing, completing 56% of his passes in college when the windows are bigger, all of a sudden he's going to become a 62% completion guy when the windows are smaller. That doesn't work.
That was what plagued Matt Leinart, especially early on in his career, was when he was at USC, had all this first-round talent around him, and every single receiver was open by 3 yards.
Yeah.
When in the NFL, it's 3 inches. That's your window. That was his first big, huge adjustment and hurdle to NFL football.
And that's what I have not watched a ton on all these big-name quarterbacks. I mean, I think I've seen Davis Webb for about 4 plays, so I know you can speak to him. I've definitely never seen the Pitt guy. I've seen a little bit of Trubisky. I've seen a lot of Deshaun Watson and Kaiser because they're on TV so much. And I've seen Mahomes a little bit on clips because he's a guy everybody keeps talking about. Mahomes is a guy who I get worried about. I mean, here's a guy who threw the ball a lot, but he was kind of – all over the place in terms of his accuracy. I think people have talked about it with Watson. I think Watson threw a couple of bad picks at a couple of bad points last year. I'm not sure accuracy is a huge concern for me with him. Kaiser is another guy. So I don't know. That's something I totally am looking at.
I think that goes back to why you're talking about why aren't these guys surefire number one picks. And maybe they are, you know, mentally they got it, but there's obviously some drawbacks on each of these four or five top guys, which is why I think it's so much more realistic that the Cardinals could have options at a few of them. And I think a lot of teams are evaluating these guys differently. You mentioned the systems or just different things that they like out of quarterback. So that's why I think a few of them could be available, and it wouldn't shock me if the Cardinals loved one of them. So that's why I just think it's a legitimate possibility, because it's not – you're not looking for a guy to fall from one or two, suddenly get to 13 or even to 9 or 8 and move up. I think all these guys could be around in the late, you know, middle of the round at some point and you can go for him.
You know, truth be told, the guy I find most intriguing, just reading the scouting reports. Okay, now did I go out and generate some 5,000 college scouting reports like the Cardinals? No, I just go to NFL.com and I clicked on some of the analysis by most of which is by Lance Zierlein, the son of Larry Zierlein, one of the Cardinals' assistants. Okay, so anyway, you just read it. It's right there on the internet, the NFL.com. The guy who supposedly has by far the best accuracy and anticipation is Nathan Peterman from Pitt. And if you read, he doesn't have the biggest arm, not at all, in terms of arm strength or velocity. But they say his anticipation and being able to put the ball to the receiver in stride exactly where you need it is uncanny. And I wonder if that's a guy that hasn't been mentioned at all.
See, I worry.
That could be a pick to the Cardinals.
I worry about a guy like that for the Cardinals with what they want to do with the vertical routes. You guys talk about the accuracy and how hard it is to fix. But I think that's the one shortcoming. If we're talking about a third, a fourth, a fifth round pick, I feel like that's the one you have to try to shape and get him to be more accurate as hard as it is, because arm strength, you're obviously not going to improve on that. A guy's arm is as strong as it is. And if they can't make those deep out throws, I think that's the problem. I think you need a Logan Thomas type guy, a Deshaun Kaiser, a Patrick Mahomes. I don't think a guy like Deshaun Watson fits this offense. I think it's the guys with the strong arms that aren't polished yet, but I think you need that guy where if everything goes well, then you have a star quarterback. The other one, I don't think the ceiling is as high if his arm isn't strong.
I will say that Peterman would be a guy you would get maybe in the third round or the fourth round, so that maybe makes a little more sense. And I did see a couple people around the combine connecting the Cardinals and Peterman. So
interesting.
I don't know. All I know is at this point, it's going to feel a little disappointing if they don't draft the quarterback.
What's interesting, too, is the situation that quarterback would enter. In fact, Bruce Arians sort of elaborated a little bit. If they do get a top quarterback in the top half of the draft, then he's going to get some serious practice reps.
If we are fortunate enough to get one, he's going to have a very unique situation. Carson doesn't practice on Wednesdays. So he's going to get first-team game reps with his starting offense on Wednesday. Well, that ain't a normal rookie. So this is going to be a very unique situation if the guy falls to us.
So a veteran's day off would benefit a rookie day. You'd have both situations, right, where Carson Palmer trying to save the arm, he doesn't practice on most Wednesdays, and all of a sudden you would see this top rookie in there. We suppose, based on that comment from Bruce Arians, getting more reps, or at least above and beyond what Drew Stanton would be afforded.
Well, I think Drew understands what's going on. I mean, Drew has already done a couple interviews where he's talked about understanding why this team might take a quarterback. I mean, Drew Stanton's going to be 33 very soon. He's in the final year of his contract. I know it's probably not his most ideal situation. I know he would have loved to have a chance to start. It doesn't look at this point like that's going to necessarily happen as a full-time thing. Obviously, he's gotten some starts in. But, yeah, I mean, if you have a chance to plug in a guy and have him learn a little bit of practice when you're going to have those open reps. I mean, my guess is, especially early in the season, you'd still need Drew Stanton taking some of that, because Drew Stanton would probably be the one that would play in a short-term deal if Carson Palmer missed a game or two. You would think it would only help the development.
And that was Arian's big issue. He's always said in the past, hey, if I get a rookie quarterback in here, I want them to play, get those real reps every single game. And obviously it's not feasible this year if they do draft a guy. You've got Palmer, who has been good the last few years, and he's still got something left. But if you can show him everything in the meeting room and then get him out on the field so he can kind of attach it to a practice field, to his actual receivers, I think that's important. And it's something where you save Carson, and then you're also thinking about the future, where you can get this guy ready if he's needed in 2018.
And it wouldn't be the only position where a veteran has to give way for the young guy. I mean, just look at the tackle positions, right? You got Jared Valdir flipping over to the right side. Not ideal, not his first choice, but you know what? It's for the betterment of the team and for DJ Humphries. And so, you know, at some point you got to sacrifice, even at the NFL level. Now, there's a lot of risk-reward with the quarterbacks. We know that. If you want maybe the best sure bet in this draft, you talk about cornerbacks in the back end of the defense. At least that's what Steve Keim was talking about.
A lot of skilled safeties and corners at the top of the draft. You know, a lot of long corners who can play outside and have tremendous skills. I think this year, Coach would agree that there's a unique set of safeties that not only can play the deep half, that can play the nickel, who have natural coverability in man situations, which is obviously something we're looking for in our defense.
And there's probably more good corners than maybe any other position in this draft. I know when the offseason started, I was convinced they were going corner in first round, and then I went receiver, and then I went quarterback, and now I'm thinking inside linebacker, which means we'll come all the way back to the beginning, and they'll probably take a corner at number 13.
Well, see, it's good to know that you're always flexible.
Right.
You know, you're moving.
Right.
You know, you don't want
to be in real time.
You got to be in real
time.
If
you spit out every single position, you're bound to be right.
That's true. I just keep throwing out names and position groups, and at some point I can point to it. I'm going to grab it off one of these Cardinals underground air checks, and I'm going to tout it. I'm going to beat my chest, and I'm going to be over here with making a big old muscle.
That's the way to do it. No one's going to check.
Yeah. What are you guys saying? I mean, what are the odds? Give me your power poll right now. Your percentages over there, Kyle. What are the odds that corner is the pick?
I'll say about 30%.
Okay, nice. I like that.
I think it makes a lot of sense. Steve was mentioning kind of the tiers of most valuable positions in the draft, and quarterback is obviously number one, and then that next tier is pass rusher and left tackle, and then corner, and he's got good pass rushers, he's got a left tackle, and they need a cornerback. So I think if you can find a guy, and a lot of them are the way he wants to play. They're long, they're athletic, they're fast, like he's saying. So if there's a couple options there at 13, I think it makes sense. I think it also makes sense if you want to trade down, since there's so many of them, maybe you can get a guy. The number he used was 18, so we're convinced he's going to go exactly to number 18, and then he can get a guy there.
He also said more than once that the safeties, there's a unique set of safeties with a set of skills that, you know, they need for their defense, that they really emphasize the ability to go down in the slot, cover man on man, the ability to play the middle of the field, hold up and run support, be able to blitz. I mean, is there any chance a guy like a Jabril Peppers could be that guy? Because I tell you, talking to a few people on the inside, gentlemen, they've worked out, had a lot of personal workouts and interaction with a lot of safeties in this draft. If nothing else, I would not be surprised if they took a safety in round two.
Yeah, well, you look at Tyrann Mathieu, and that's the example that they'd love to follow, where the way he can wreck games defensively, doing all he does, and that's what they were looking for in Tyvon Branch, who didn't really pan out his first year, but their hope is he can do the same things, be a safety up high, but also be in the slot. You can use a guy like Mathieu, who's been able to blitz effectively. So they love the positional versatility. You saw with Daylon Buchanan a little bit moving around. Tyrann Mathieu moves around all the time, so it's not necessarily, hey, we want this guy because we need to fill this safety spot for next year. It's just this feeling like, let's get all these hybrid players, all these playmakers, and let's put them in there. And if they like a guy like Peppers, or there's a lot of guys in that mold that if they like them, sure, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
And I will say that you mentioned the hybrid, and that was a big deal last year when they signed Branch. They've made it very clear that they like these guys that can play in a couple different spots, that can move them around, that they're not pigeonholing a guy into one place. That's what makes them so valuable. I do agree. I mean, I think the back end, whether it's cornerback or safety, I mean, I think that's something that they're going to have to look very seriously at, because, you know, between what they already have on the roster and what you might want to add and where contracts are, there's a lot of these guys that are coming up after the season again. You're going to want to build some of that going forward.
The fact that it's so deep, though, it makes me think it's going to be round two or three. That, you know, there's such a supply.
That makes more sense.
You know,
first round safety would be surprising to me. And obviously, they would think the guy was going to be a superstar if they took a safety.
Yeah, and there's the two guys. You got Hooker and Adams that I think everybody thinks, but those guys might
they
be off the
higher.
Board by the time they pick a 13 anyway.
See, I'm more apt to think right now they'd be more likely to add the next Patrick Willis, otherwise known as Reuben Foster, Steve Keim.
I thought about Patrick Willis quite a bit, who had overcome a lot in his life coming out of Ole Miss, but just in terms of, you know, the size and the movement skills and how explosive he is on impact. I mean, Reuben can do it all. He's got three down value. He's got cover ability. He can match up on backs and tight ends with ease. And he's as violent a hitter that, you know, I've seen in some time. So Reuben's a fantastic player and certainly one of the better players in college football.
What if, I mean, gentlemen, what if Reuben Foster was a guy, and what if he was anywhere close to Patrick Willis? I mean, he was an absolute wrecking ball for the Niners when they had that defense really rolling. I mean, think of the dynamic that would add to the Big Red D.
Well, it's something they've been missing, quite frankly, since they lost Darrell Washington.
Oh, no. How's the message boards been going over there, Darren? How about some of the chats and so forth?
I feel like you just set me up to walk right into that.
No, I think you set yourself up. You brought that up out of nowhere. That's why I winced and reacted.
We've had a little Darrell Washington lull, it seems like. I don't check your Twitter all the time, but
that's right.
People ask Darren some Darrell Washington
and this
questions.
Time you brought it up.
That's true.
And you're going to feel the repercussions online.
I got to be honest, Reuben Foster is a guy that I don't think will be there at 13. You know, if they trade up, maybe.
The off the field stuff, perhaps.
Maybe.
Okay.
Shoulder
Hassan Reddick
at this point.
Out of Temple. There's another guy I think we definitely need to
Temple.
Keep our name on.
Are you making a direct line from Bruce Arians Temple to.
You might have some inside knowledge over there. Yes, players from Temple and or Virginia Tech or North Carolina State with Steve Keim. I think they do have a little more insight than most teams.
That's true.
Yeah. I don't know if he would play inside or outside or kind of a hybrid role of both. But if you're talking about inside linebackers, that's definitely a position that when you break down those tiers, it's not as valuable as some others. So you would definitely have to love a guy if you're taking him at 13. I think Reuben Foster makes a ton of sense because of how good he is, how it seems like he's really this can't-miss prospect. Reddick is a guy that isn't quite at that level, so that would surprise me a little bit at 13. But clearly he's a guy that is explosive, and Steve Keim liked him too. So
I think they value adding an alpha male to this defense, a really hard hitter, a nasty guy that would bring some of that attitude and just – set the tone for the entire defense. I just think that's an ingredient that's missing ever since Adrian Wilson left. That guy who needs to be feared. The guy when, you know, Matt Hasselbeck used to say he'd walk up to the line of scrimmage, where's 24? Where's Adrian Wilson? Because is he going to wreck me on this snap? I think the Cardinals would value that, that guy.
I could see that. And having that be a linebacker, that makes the most sense. I mean, I don't know if you get that guy necessarily as an interior defensive lineman. They've got their pass rushers, you know, and while those guys can wreak some havoc, I don't know if those guys are the intimidators as like you're talking about. And I think that is something. I mean, even.
But that is Reuben Foster's rep, right?
Yes.
I mean, he is a hard hitter.
Again, and that's the other thing when you talk about, I don't know if it makes sense to have that guy in the defensive backfield anymore like Adrian Wilson was, just because the way the rules are.
Right.
So,
but how good has their defense been? If you say they haven't had one since Adrian Wilson, in those 4 or 5 years since, their defense has always been good statistically, and you know they've done a good job. I don't think that aspect matters. I'd much rather, if you have a guy that's intimidating and you have a cornerback that's a little bit different personality, but he's a shutdown corner, I think you're taking the guy that you think is the better player. Now, if you love the way Reuben Foster plays and the fiery nature is a bonus, I get that. But I don't think you're going to take a guy just for that.
I'm not saying they haven't been good without that guy. I'm just saying I think they value that guy. That's something they have been missing. They've been good despite missing that ingredient, that alpha male, that dog sort of in the middle that sets a tone. Ever since Darnell Dockett as well. I mean, you know, Dockett was that guy other teams feared. And they've been missing it. But I agree. Just the position itself. And, you know, Keim rates him, you know, quarterback, shutdown corner, right, pass rusher. I mean, those and left tackle, right? Mm-hmm. Those are in a tier all by themselves just based on the position.
And you see it in free agency, the way those guys get all the money. So it's a lot easier to get them in the draft and pay them on a rookie pay scale instead of giving them $10, $15 million a year on the open market.
And then when we get into round three through the rest of the draft, that's when the Cardinals tend to really shine. And maybe this is a big reason why.
You try to understand why you missed on particular players. And a lot of times it may have been because we didn't have all of the information that was necessary. Not only the information from the colleges, but I'm talking about going all the way back to little league coaches, going back to high school coaches. Leave no stone unturned, because there is going to be bits and pieces of information that you can gather that, you know, maybe in years past we wouldn't have gotten.
Yeah, Darren, what if we did go back over to what, the Mesa Public School System? Is that where you grew up over?
Scottsdale.
Scottsdale. You know, maybe went over to the gym, over to the rec center where you play basketball every Saturday. I mean, you know, not sure you'd want to know what we'd find out.
No, you don't want to have anybody digging up in your closet, you know.
But once again, it's about, look, there are measurables and there's things you can't ascertain at the combine or on the game film. And sometimes those aspects of a player are just as important, if not more important, than anything else.
It's interesting. You look at a lot of these guys that are successful among their draft picks, and just coming to mind, a David Johnson, who thought he should have been a first round pick, but he was a small school guy, so he went later. And John Brown, who everybody told, you're never making the NFL, you can barely play in college. And Deion Buchanan had a chip on his shoulder. And Marcus Golden is a guy who always felt like he was, you know, overlooked because of he's not this explosive guy who's got the long arms and the perfect build for a pass rusher. And all these guys have been so successful in the NFL. And I think definitely that motivation Tony Jefferson is another guy when he went undrafted. Yeah. And it just made all those guys work hard, and you see them continuing to work hard. David Johnson was just talking in the weight room how he just loves to lift and he just loves all this stuff. So I think you need that personal motivation, because we do see a lot of guys who kind of care, but they're kind of doing it for the paycheck and they never reach that level because they don't have that chip.
It is funny that he talked about the guys that basically, you know, have something on their shoulder and something to prove. I mean, Buchanan's a good example because he was a first round pick, but let's face it, nobody thought he was going to be a first round pick.
Mm-hmm. And he had like two offers going into college,
you know,
or something.
It's a combination. Marcus Golden was a second round pick. That's still pretty good, but based on his production in college, he was angry he wasn't a first round pick. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys that are first round picks, and I'm not saying there aren't a lot of first round picks that are very successful and are driven, but the bottom line is, if you have been successful your whole life and then you're going to be a first round pick, it's, I can understand where you'd be missing some motivation because you've just always been able to accomplish it.
Well, you know, Steve Keim went on to say in that press conference, and I quote, there are a lot of times these first round picks come in through the door and they feel like they should be given something while the third rounders have to fight and they've been fighting their whole life.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
They have that mindset.
You just look at the first rounders, you know, they have the very first day of the draft and all the attention's on them and they have their press conferences. And for a few weeks, everybody's telling them how great they are. And that just kind of emanates throughout them throughout the whole offseason because everybody's looking at them. They're seeing what they're doing and they get so much attention that you're bound to get a big head at some point.
So the schedule comes out on Thursday and there's going to be a lot of road trips, a lot of travel this year for the Arizona Cardinals, right? From the five preseason games and the extra game in Canton, Ohio, to the East Coast games. You got D.C., you got Philly, and then, of course,
many miles.
London is calling. In fact, DJ Humphries talking to the media, and he was asked about London and that pending international road trip, and here was DJ's assessment.
You know, the funny thing I heard is, like, all the food is way better. Because it's like, it's a lot of stuff that's banned and over there that we just put in our foods. Like, people telling me, like, their yolk and their eggs are orange. I'm like, really? They're like, yeah, that's how it was supposed to be. I'm like, man, I can't wait to get over there and get some eggs, man. You know what I mean? So I'm just excited to get there and see how different it is, you know?
All right, so there's DJ Humphries. And I'll be honest with you, it defies every other scouting report I've ever heard about London. I've never been in England in general, that a lot of the times the food is bland. That's what
Kyle's
Americans
been
find.
There. He can tell us all about it.
I had fish and chips for every meal and I never had an egg. No. So I'll have to check it out alongside DJ.
Had an egg, you wouldn't have seen it raw. I'm assuming it would have been cooked.
Wait a minute. Kyle isn't the guy who gets up at 4:30 in the morning like Rocky and he cracks the three eggs into the glass and just slurps them down?
That's not me. No.
No raw eggs before your workout in the morning? Okay. Ugh. Wow. All right. Well, we'll see about that. I guess people are already offering some of the folks in the UK to prepare breakfast for DJ Humphries.
Save a spot for me, too.
There you go. All of us on this edition of Cardinals Underground.